Welcome to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. Walter, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, man. Would you like to introduce yourself to everyone out there listening?
Sure. I'm Walt Schaub. I'm currently with the Project on Government Oversight as a Senior Government Ethics Fellow. Before that, I was with other nonprofits. And before that, I ran the Office of Government Ethics, which oversees conflicts of interest in the executive branch. And I had a long career in the federal government before leaving for the private sector.
Why did you leave?
Well, I'll be honest, and I don't mean to get political here, but it was extremely difficult to lead the Office of Government Ethics while President Trump was in office and just was openly declared war on government ethics. And scandal after scandal was erupting in that administration. And I ultimately just felt I couldn't do the mission of the agency while he was in charge. So I wound up resigning, which is a shame because I really wanted to spend the rest of my career in government. And I spent my entire career trying to stay out of the media. And unfortunately, the firestorm that came when he took over just put government ethics at the center of everything and unfortunately or fortunately changed the direction of my whole career.
Well, don't consider me media. Consider me a human being willing to have a conversation. But when it comes to government ethics and leaving when Trump was in office, I mean, was there conflicts of interest, like you mentioned before? Like, were there things that you weren't supposed to report on or things they didn't want you looking into? Because it might, like I said, my examples will be more about the intelligence agencies, but a quick example about Life magazine during Lyndon Johnson, there were a bunch of scandals before he became president, and then they all dropped. And obviously, it's common sense not to talk trash on your president. But there's also like, what's the truth? I mean, you're technically skewing the truth in it to media. You should be kind of held to the accountability aspect of like, you got to report it, whether it's a conflict of interest or not. I mean, it's knowledge the public should know about it.
You know, America is a pretty young country in the scheme of things. And it takes a lot of years to start building a government ethics program and a professional civil service that isn't just cronies of the president. And so really, it was a process over 150 years or so. They're trying to set up some structures for the government. And in about 1962, they created a set of really strict conflict of interest laws, but they exempted the president. And, you know, you had John Kennedy, who was extremely wealthy, and that creates a potential for conflicts of interest. You have complaints about Lyndon Johnson. And then things just went off the rails with Richard Nixon trying to use power to crush enemies and things. And so in the wake of the Watergate scandals, they passed a sweeping bunch of reforms to create government ethics rules. And they still pretty much exempted the president. But ever since then, presidents tried to lead by example by resolving their conflicts of interest. And that held true for Carter, Reagan, the first Bush, Bill Clinton, the second Bush, and Obama. Whatever you may think of their policies, they and their vice presidents eliminated their conflicts of interest. And then in 2017, we get this new guy who says he's not going to divest his financial interests. And he pretty much turned the White House into a profit center, spending millions of government dollars going down to Mar-a-Lago, using visits with foreign dignitaries to advertise his properties, becoming his own landlord because the Trump International Hotel was in a building leased from the federal government. It kind of reached a peak in, I can't remember what year it was. I think it was 2019. He was at the G7 summit and announced that he wanted, or he was at a big economic conference. It was either Davos or maybe the G20, and announced that he wanted to have the G7 summit, where you get the seven large economy countries together. to meet at his private resort in Mar-a-Lago, where he would make a killing off of sending the government to his own property. And that was actually a step too far. The public went berserk, and it was actually some Republican members of the Senate who got him to back down. They reached out and said, you know, we've been supporting you all along. We just can't support this. And he wound up backing down. But that kind of behavior had a trickle-down effect on his entire administration. I've never seen so many conflict of interest scandals and misuse of position scandals. And the other thing that happens is the Office of Government Ethics loses its ability to influence things inside the government. It has no real power to conduct an investigation. It has no power to impose sanctions or penalties. It's really just a toothless tiger. And so for leverage, we always had to rely on the White House. You could call up the White House. And I worked at the Office of Government Ethics in both the Bush and Obama administrations, and I found both of their White Houses completely responsive. In fact, if I didn't know the names of the players and I went back and looked at my notes from a period of time, I wouldn't be able to tell you whether it was the Bush administration or the Obama administration when, you know, some exchange happened, because they were always responsive. And if you had a problem with an agency, you would call up the White House and say they're not following this rule, or they're not doing that thing, or this guy doesn't want to divest some conflicting financial interest. And within a day or so, the White House would have them whipped into line, because they'd get a call from the White House saying, stop ignoring the Office of Government Ethics. You're going to create a scandal for us. But we lost that leverage because the Trump administration was hostile to government ethics, and they were not interested in intervening and helping us. And ultimately, the clashes just got so big over that I finally decided, if I stick around in this job, I'm just going to be window dressing for corruption, because I'll look like I'm acting as though everything's fine and normal in the Office of Government Ethics. And it wasn't. But I also didn't want to seem partisan by doing something like refusing to sign off on the financial disclosures of all of the White House appointees. So kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, I decided it was time to resign and sound the alarm about the things that I was seeing. You know, and I think one of my big concerns had always been that it would lower the standards. And I think it has. I see the Biden administration trying to show that they're more ethical generally than the Trump administration. But you can achieve that if you wake up and you're breathing. They have not gone back to some of the standards of the Bush and Obama administration, where you try to set people two steps back behind the line and say, well, there's ethics, there's the rule. Let's be a little stricter and put you back here so you don't accidentally violate the rule. And these guys in this administration now think more like lawyers. They're like, well, there's the line, so we can go right up to it, and it'll be fine as long as we don't cross it. And the problem is, when you live right on the line, sometimes you're going to fall over it. And so I think it had this effect of lowering expectations. And it turned ethics into sort of a partisan issue, because on the Hill, you start talking to members of Congress about government ethics, and you know, the Democrats will see it as an effort, as an opportunity to bash Trump, and they get mad when you complain about Biden. And the Republicans see it as an attack on Trump. And they've lost the ability to just view government ethics objectively and say, you know what, this should not be a partisan issue. Everyone should care about this. And so I think that was a real turning point, and I had the misfortune of being there at the time. I did what I could to hold them in line. I forced them to release some secret ethics waivers that they were issuing to exempt people from ethics rules. I came down on Kellyanne Conway when she went on TV from the White House grounds and told everybody to go buy Ivanka Trump's products. But ultimately, I wasn't going to be able to change the culture, because tone from the top is everything. And as I said, ever since the ethics reforms following Watergate, you had Republican and Democratic presidents alike cheering for the government ethics program. And then we had this guy come in who just declared war on it. And it made it untenable to stay in that job. And it was a sad thing. It was a hard decision to make. I woke up every morning and asked myself three questions. I said, can I achieve the mission of this agency? Can I tell the truth? And can I do my job ethically and morally? And, you know, I was always able to answer yes to the second two questions. I was always able to say, yes, I can tell the truth, even if it's uncomfortable. And, you know, if they fire me for telling the truth, then, you know, that'll hurt them worse than it hurts me. And I was able to say I was able to do the job ethically and morally because I wasn't willing to cut any corners for them. But it finally reached the point where I couldn't answer yes to the question, can I do the mission of the agency? And it really broke down when we couldn't get answers from them as we were reviewing White House financial disclosures. We wanted to know more information about things they held. We wanted to know what assignments they were doing so we could see if their financial interests posed conflicts of interest. And they had just cut us off. There was no information coming. And that's when I just had to leave. So, you know, since then, I found ways to continue to work on government ethics issues by going to nonprofit watchdogs. But it definitely is a different future than I had envisioned for myself. I had planned to stay in government and stay out of the media for the rest of my career. And, it came at a personal cost having to leave.
Do any of those nonprofit organizations have any teeth at all, like able to actually enact real change besides maybe publishing a couple of articles that get the public stirring about it? Because honestly, if you were to ask me after Watergate, I think the only normal probably presidency was that whoever took over after Watergate and everything like that, after Nixon was gone. And then the sliding scale starts. Eventually, guidelines start to be pushed and boundaries start to be pushed. You can accept something here, accept something there. And then it becomes to what Trump kind of made it into, more of an advertising thing. But I mean, what do we call government ethics? The Hunter Biden laptop thing was labeled misinformation and disinformation for the longest time until it came out. And now they're reporting on Biden having documents by a Corvette or something in his garage. And I'm just like, it's not everybody. They're just choosing on what they're going to publish and what they're not going to publish. They got the people, whoever's supposed to be reviewing this, besides the nonprofit people, that are like, yeah, you can report this because we want you to at this moment. They're like smears. That's all it is now. And it's politics has now became a thing that I'm not interested in, at least watching the debates or anything, is because it's all just a show. It's just people barking at each other back and forth. And it seems like it's turned more into a comedy, or the actual news that people like to tune into now, besides the main news networks, are like Colbert Report or something like that. And that's just because it has been brought down to this level where, I mean, everyone's going to find their own viewpoint and stay with it. But what about the actual corruption stuff that starts happening? I mean, would you need another Watergate, or would you need another open release to the public about all the stuff that's been going on that the White House has been either covering up or not letting be publicly known? I mean,
so I think there's two ways of looking at it. I mean, in answer to that last question, I don't think another Watergate would help. I think the Trump administration was our next Watergate, and the new administration didn't come in demanding sweeping ethics reforms. And Congress has not passed sweeping ethics reforms largely because President Trump's allies are afraid that any reforms would look like a rebuke of him. But both parties are complicit in not supporting ethics reforms in Congress. They're still running around trading stocks and refusing to prevent themselves. And you've got a bipartisan effort to ban stock trading and a bipartisan effort to keep allowing it. I do think, though, that after Watergate, things really did change. I mean, yeah, you had a lot of scandals still, because humans are always going to have scandals. You had the Iran-Contra scandal with Reagan. You had Whitewater with Clinton. And so you're always going to have things like that at the individual level. But when you look systemically, there's this unfortunate distinction. At the career level, the folks who are not political appointees, but who apply for jobs and say, you know, I'm a really good airplane mechanic and the Navy hires them, or I'm a really good, astrophysicist and NASA hires them based on merit rather than political loyalty. That's a workforce of about 2.1 million federal employees. And I know people love to bash federal employees. They're an easy target. But the truth is, the culture in the federal government is unlike anything in the private sector. They're extremely strict. These employees are subject to investigation by inspectors general, internal affairs offices, offices of professional responsibility, ethics offices, congressional committees in two different chambers, sometimes run by two different parties, and management investigations, Freedom of Information Act requests. They are in a fishbowl, completely scrutinized all the time. And their rules are incredibly strict. In the private sector, people are always buying each other gifts and taking them out to lunch and taking them on trips. And they can't accept gifts in the federal government. And I think the upshot of that is our day-to-day lives are pretty free of corruption. Unlike some countries, you don't have to go in and bribe somebody to get a passport. You don't have to bribe somebody to process your veterans benefits. Airline companies can't bribe air traffic controllers to get landing priority over their competitors. We have a system that on the day-to-day functioning of the government, the level below the political level, the system is extremely effective at preventing corruption. And that's probably the saving grace of all of this. Unfortunately, we have a disgusting inversion of priorities. You have the people with the least authority, these frontline federal workers covered by the strictest rules, and you have the people with the most power exempted from the rules. While the president's appointees are subject to conflict of interest rules, the president and the vice president, every member of Congress, every member of the Supreme Court, basically every political elected official and Supreme Court justice is just completely exempt from any meaningful ethics rules. And yet they're incredibly strict at enforcing them for all the people who don't have much power and can't abuse their position easily. And we really need to turn that around. We really need our elected officials to be accountable more. And, you know, I think to the extent that we're talking about public trust, I don't think that would be the ultimate cure. It's not a panacea because we are so politicized. People are always going to be suspicious of politicians of the other party. People are going to, always think they're doing wrong. But that's not an excuse for them to cop out and not bother to have more accountability and higher standards. And I think that when you couple that partisanship and our extreme polarization in our country with the lack of ethics accountability at the top compared to what we have at the bottom, I think it really fuels and feeds that dissatisfaction with politics and makes people disengage. And I think our democracy is in great danger because I think we're so polarized that there are people who will support an authoritarian leader if they think that it will put their side on top. When in reality, I think if we had members of Congress stop trading stocks, presidents stop having conflicting financial interests, increase respect for the rule of law among these individuals, then at least I think that would lower the pressure a little bit and help ease this polarization that's ripping our country apart. And I think the one other thing I'll say is, we've got these dual scandals where you've got a former and current president who have screwed up in the handling of classified materials. You know, I'm personally of the view that I think Trump's was resisting turning it over to the government and lying about whether he still had them, whereas Biden, I think, was sloppy and negligent. But I think people are either too quick to see them as the same or too quick to excuse Biden. I don't think Biden says anything like what Trump did, but I don't think what Biden did is acceptable. I think it's absolutely terrible. How the F do you wind up?
Say it. I don't care.
Yeah. How the fuck do you wind up with classified information in a box in a garage next to your Corvette? That is absurd.
Hear me out. Those are smears. 100%.
And I think that there are two causes of it. One, I think it's tied to this attitude of, like I said, they think like lawyers, so they can go right up to the edge, and they really don't take these rules very seriously. You know, they want to do better than the last guy and actually not commit crimes, but they just think it's a matter of checking off the box and saying, I'm minimally compliant with the law, therefore I'm a good guy. Well, you know what? Not a criminal is not a high enough standard for our elected officials. And so I think this cavalier attitude about rules is and ethics and all of this stuff feeds into the kind of conduct, the kind of lax attitude that leads to you having classified material in your garage. I think the second thing, and this might be relevant to a lot of the work you do, is that there's a rampant problem of overclassification in our government. The government likes to keep secrets by slapping classified on absolutely everything they can. And so much of what's classified doesn't need to be classified. And that too erodes democracy and undermines transparency and accountability. It also has the effect of leading government officials to be careless with classified information, because if they know what's in the materials, isn't that sensitive and shouldn't be classified in the first place, then they're going to develop bad habits where they're not that careful about it. And the problem is there are some things that are very sensitive and should be secret and not stored in a garage. And when you're cavalier all the time, because you know most of this stuff doesn't matter, doesn't need to be classified, you develop bad habits that are going to lead you to make mistakes with stuff that really could endanger national security. So I think there's two things that need to change here. I think we need more accountability and more rules for the people at the top. And I also think we need to solve the problem of overclassification. You know, the one hope I have is that in all this partisan fighting they're going to do in Congress over these competing scandals, that they actually roll up their sleeves and on both sides get serious about trying to change the classification system so the government can't hide as much as it does from the public.
Well, they destroy documents too. They have a routine destroying service. And that to me is just nuts from a historical standpoint. You don't know what's going to be a major historical thing. But if I have the unpopular opinion in both the Trump Mar-a-Lago stuff and the Biden stuff, to me, the government's not going to let that hit the media unless they want it to. And I'm just, I tackle it from that standpoint. I mean, first of all, the Trump thing with the documents on the floor, it's stamped secret right on it. I'm sorry. To me, that was just like, I had to laugh at that. Whether it's real or not, the government's not going to let you take a picture of a document that says fucking secret on the top of it. And then the Biden thing, like sitting next to a Corvette. I mean, I don't know what that's about, but to me, it just, it brings back into what really distracts us as a public, which is the left side and the right side, the people that want to go against it because it's Biden doing it and finally it's Biden's mess up, or the people that want to go against it because it's Trump. The government's not going to let you do a scandal on their president. It's just not going to happen. They have a whole PR system to be able to handle that. I mean, you can even take it back to the 60s and 70s when there's J. Edgar Hoover in there and the amount of tactics the FBI did to either hold blackmail over a reporter's head. Operation Mockingbird is a real thing. And whether you want to say that's conspiracy, there's a lot of documentation to show in the past about the number of scandals that were going on between a president that did not hit the light of day until way long after they were done being president. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about Bush that keeps coming out, and there's a bunch of stuff that comes out in the past, documents that they classify. They called it national security. It's protecting an image. I mean, it doesn't make sense when you start seeing a bunch of media reporting about, and either if it's Fox hitting Biden hard or if it's CNN hitting Trump hard, it just disrupts the democracy amongst the people. I mean, the people have a huge amount of say in a lot of things if we hold accountability to our government. But as soon as we see something, we immediately run off with it because it's on our side or it's against us, or it's just, and it gets into these team aspects. That's the only way we can talk about conspiracy stuff. Any corruption, any blackmail, any money, any prostitute stuff, anything like that comes through if it's cited in a narrative. It's the only way it hits the light of day now. I mean, I might have an unpopular opinion in saying that, but looking from the track record of history, there's plenty of stuff that came out 10 years later about Lyndon Johnson, 10 years later about Nixon, not just in Watergate. There's stuff that came out later. And it was like, why wasn't this reported on? Well, the reporters, let's see, the guy from Life magazine met casually with Alan Dulles all the time, the guy who was the director of the CIA. They're friends. I mean, it's friends in media reporting. I don't know. We can understand capitalism, right? Capitalism, business relationships. Is CNN going to, and I had a, what's his name? Edward Allwood on here. He used to work at CNN as a correspondent. And he talked about, yeah, if somebody's going to report on a airplane issue or something like that, and the head guy of CNN has a relationship with the guy who owns that airport company, that story is not hitting the light of day. And then you start getting into the pressure that's on journalists to be actual able to report the real story on things, and they're skewed. And I've talked to plenty of journalists, and I think that's why there's shows out there like The Hill that have a balanced left and right host on the show to kind of balance both perspectives and it just being one-sided. But there's a large amount of influence when it comes into relationships with government, relationships with media, relationships with business, whether you want to call it casual meetings or you want to call it more than just trade deals or something like that. But I think it's because the precedent's set. I think there's like, it's like an HR department at work or something like that. They take you into the office and they go, you can't say that because of this. But then how long do you work at a company? Let's say 5 years, 10 years, you're not the fresh faced person you were in the beginning that was 100% following their rules. No, now you're on your phone. Now you're texting, you're making phone calls on work hours that are not work related. And that's kind of what you can take with Congress. You can take with all these people that are doing all this stuff that's unethical in the eyes of government. It's because either they've been in there too long or they have rules that are established, but they are not following them. And there's a gray zone where it's like, what's a real serious issue? Well, a real government mess up is a real serious issue. If you're taking a lot of money and you're buying and spending a lot of government funding, that's an issue. But if you're taking a couple checks here and there and doing some off books dinners, is that a real government issue? That's what I'm saying, is I'm not accepting that. I'm saying that's how the sliding scale changes. That's how things that necessarily should be reported on aren't being reported on, because now there's a whole conglomeration. It's set a new standard for how the office works and how the office acts. I'm not blaming federal employees. I just think that's the work climate. And I think that's like that in any job facility.
You know, I think
disagree if you want. It's fine. I'm not going to get mad.
No, I think bigger picture, one of the big crises we're facing in our country is a crisis of faith in our institutions. And I think we have trouble figuring out what's true. We can't even agree on reality anymore. And you have, you know, entire news networks on the fringe. I think pumping out, you know, wild conspiracy theories. You know, if I see it on OAN or Newsmax, I pretty much write it off as crackpot stuff, this Q stuff. But I think the government has unfortunately contributed to this problem. You can you mentioned Johnson. You can go back to the Johnson administration when the government lied to us about the Gulf of Tonkin, and they claimed that there was an unprovoked attack on Navy ships. And it turns out the whole thing was a fabrication. Our guys were actually you know, scouting the coast and being provocative. And this wasn't just some random attack on a ship off the coast. And that sent us into a war where, what, 90,000 Americans died. The escalation was unbelievable after that. And, you know, or you talk a lot about the CIA cover-ups where, yeah, people can write things off as fringe, but then you get the MK Ultra doctor falling from a building and all of the records destroyed. There was a lawsuit a few years back where some guy sued the CIA, and his claims sounded truly crazy. I can't even remember what they were, but I remember reading them and thinking, this guy's a nutball. And the government moved for dismissal, saying, this is just wacky. This isn't a claim. And the judge, I wish I could find the opinion. If I find it, I'll send it to you. The judge came back with this hilarious decision that said, yeah, it sounds crazy to me too. But here's all these times you've been caught lying to us. And if I'd heard those stories back then, I would have thought they were crazy. And you now admit they're true. So how do we know that this crazy story isn't true? And the judge even said, skeptical of it, but you've put yourself in a position where we now have to have a trial because you've lied to us too many times. And I think it's so easy for politicians to lie without accountability. In fact, in Congress, They have a constitutional protection. You cannot prosecute a member of Congress for something they say on the floor of Congress. So they could go on there and mention you by name and say you sleep with goats. And you couldn't sue them for libel because they're protected for anything they say on the floor of Congress. And they abuse that all the time. You've got President Trump, whose lies were tracked and they were just unbelievable. You know, 30,000 plus lies. Or this crazy guy, George Santos, who would have you believe like he's a Mars exploring astronaut. But then you have the little things that add up. Like when they confronted President Biden's spokesperson with the discovery of these records at the Penn Center, these classified records that he shouldn't have had. Well, first of all, we should have heard this from the White House before CBS uncovered it. And second of all, once CBS did uncover it, the response only focused on that incident. They didn't volunteer that, oh, well, you should know that we found him in more than one location. Then they could have added, oh, it was negligence. We were sloppy and stupid as opposed to sinister. But you lose all the credibility when you respond narrowly only to the question that asks and don't disclose there was more than one location until the press discovers it and comes back and confronts you again. You don't get to have any credibility after that. And I think he put Garland, the Attorney General Garland, in the position where he had to assign a special counsel after that because of that omission. And so I think ranging from little omissions like that to gigantic lies like the Gulf of Tonkin claims, I think that fuels this distrust of institutions that then can be exploited by people who do want to foment chaos. I mean, we've got Russia out there actively funding programs to sow chaos in our country, and you've got extreme people on the media like Alex Jones, you know, lying about the shooting up in Connecticut. What was the school again? I can't believe I just forgot the name.
You can't talk about it on YouTube though.
Yeah, and
I know the name of it, but if you say it, it's going to get flagged off YouTube, so don't say it.
Oh, okay, so we won't say it. So it's just heartbreaking. But I think some of this is the government's own making. And this goes back to the idea that I think we need to be holding the top levels of government, these political appointees, more accountable for lies, accountable for ethics violations, even subject them to some ethics rules, because they're very comfortable subjecting lower level people to it. And the irony is we probably need an aerospace engineer who's really good at his job or her job more than we need some individual member of Congress. And so the claims that, oh, well, strict rules would deter people from running from Congress. Well, you've decided that we can afford to not, you know, to risk deterring some aerospace engineer or some medical researcher from taking a government job by imposing rules on them. And you're telling me that somehow some individual member of Congress is so valuable that the country would fall apart without their services if they chose not to run for office because they had to live up to some ethics standards that apply to the rest of the government. I think they have too high an opinion of themselves. So again, for me, the big issue, and it isn't about agreeing or disagreeing, it's just what I'm focused on is I think there's a lack of accountability at the elected level of government and the Supreme Court, which, by the way, every court in the country has an ethics code except for the Supreme Court. They've decided that they don't need one. And that isn't just on Justice Roberts' head. All of the justices on both sides don't seem to think they need to be subject to an ethics rule. And they're out there hawking books about their own lives that they know people wouldn't be buying if they weren't Supreme Court justices. So they're profiting off of their federal position, but then turning their nose up and saying, well, we don't need rules because we're so, you know, above any kind of reproach, even though every other judge in the country needs rules because they're not as pure as we are.
the number of memoirs out there from a CIA director that it's like, oh my God, you think you're going to get the good stuff. The interesting thing is, if you look at Richard Helms, he was very secretive CIA director, but his rough draft is his free flow of thoughts. And when he was talking about covert action, he says it because it's just his rough draft before it's tossed into a ghostwriter. And he goes, over the years, the covert action ability of the government has seen over thousands of covert action, like just plans and operations. And then in the final draft, the one that's published in the book says dozens. So from thousands to dozens, the guy who was in charge of it, who was rough drafting it off of his brain, says thousands, but then the final copy goes, we're just going to change that lettering around to make sure it doesn't look so bad. But I mean, look at history example is Johnson. Johnson in the history books talked about that accidentally one day he was taking a leak and he had peed on a Secret Service member's pants. And then he was so tired, he was working all the time, that he had a phone installed into the bathroom to be able to, you know, talk and keep his meetings going. That's not it at all. It was the FBI's PR team that changed it around. The real story from the Secret Service member is Johnson used to have all the Secret Service members stand around him in a circle and he would piss on their shoes and laugh at them. He's known for showing his balls around. That's literally, they called him bull balls. So I swear to you.
I find that hard to believe.
But I swear to you, Google story. It right now. Look it up while I'm saying it. Literally, there's so many accounts of the people that flew or were pilots on Air Force One. His wife, even, you know, the buzzer that's in the White House, that's Johnson's creation. He got caught cheating. His wife caught him and the Secret Service didn't alert him and the Secret Service got ringed out about it. There's plenty of, like I said, it's the PR team.
That sounds more like Kennedy.
Kennedy had affairs too. Kennedy had plenty of affairs too. But that's what I'm saying is it's your predecessor that sets the normalization for it as well too. Johnson, there's plenty of secret tapes you can watch of him. It's all on YouTube. He's burping. He's doing a bunch of stuff while he's having a conversation with a person. He goes, you need to add a couple more inches to my pants. And the guy who's making his pants is like, why is that? He goes, because he keep cutting my balls. He goes, it's like I'm sitting on a wired bike. That's his voice 100% on the tapes. And then you even look deeper into it. The number of people that ripped biographies that either worked with Johnson that talked about Johnson would have us come into the bathroom while he was taking a dump because he wanted to. And it's a bunch of stuff like that. And it sounds conspiracy, but that's because, I mean, the history books aren't going to write that down for you. The history books aren't good at that, but there's plenty of firsthand accounts of it. There's plenty of other stories. If you just Google it, you'll be able to find it as well too. And it sounds nuts to me. I never believed it at first until I started reading more into it. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover, he invaded the movie theaters, man. He made a rule for when the FBI comes on screen, the bad guys can shoot as much as they want, but they have to miss. I mean,
jeez.
Either that's,
yeah, I don't know what to believe or not about that, but it does.
Did you Google it? Google it.
Of something that I've thought often, like, have you ever wondered about the psychology of the kind of person who would want to be president?
Oh my God, I wouldn't ever want to be in that position, dude. You have way too much power. I mean, look at Nixon. Nixon thought the agencies worked for him and he could make them do whatever he wanted, but they don't work for him. You know who they do protect? They protect their director. They scandals about Hoover never came out until way out. I wouldn't even say Watergate. I think a little bit after Watergate started coming out, but Hoover died in 74. I mean, there's an interview you can watch on YouTube of Congressman Hale Boggs in 71. He was part of the House American Unselect Committee, and he started talking about Hoover wiretapping congressmen and he needs to retire. This is a complete breach of justice. And the guy literally goes, what's your evidence? It sounds like a conspiracy. And it's an AP news video you can watch. And then Boggs died in 72. And then in 74, Hoover dies. And then all the scandals come out after Watergate. So all that stuff he was talking about wiretapping congressmen and spying on them and using blackmail. I mean, that's how Hoover got his job. Yeah, even
Hoover's an important reminder of the abuse of power. I mean, the stories about that guy are just amazing.
Well, he was a world police is the problem. And I think that's just anybody that gets in a position like that. Like, I've been pretty critical on Hoover. I've been pretty critical on the agencies, but I've also talked to people who are, you know, patriots of the agencies. I've talked to people who have written biographies about Hoover and kind of learning the perspective about it. I'd ask you the question, if you were put in a position to be the world police, basically, I mean, would that corrupt you? It's like having superpowers. Are you going to take the guy and arrest him? No, he's going to break out and maybe come after your family. Or are you going to end it there? I mean, it's a difficult question to ask, but I think if you answer
it's
honestly,
almost like if you want the job, you're disqualified from it. Because when you asked me that, I found myself thinking, I don't want that job. I don't want that power.
Yeah. History collection, how Lyndon Johnson's controlled others and used them around them. Do you want me to read it to you?
Sure, sure. This is entertaining.
Fact check on the infamous Johnson treatment. Amongst other sources from historycollections.com or CNN that looks at accounts of the press and various interviews with agents, that Lyndon Johnson would not only bully others to get his proposals through, but also expose himself in a press room and on Air Force One. There he was, the leader of the free world, President Lyndon Baines Johnson, aboard Air Force One, standing in front of reporters, naked as a jaybird. From History Collections, 2017. One day, after a 1964 presidential campaign event, Johnson invited White House reporter Frank Cormier onto Air Force One to hold an interview. As it was a very hot day, Johnson decided to lose his shirt and pants while speaking to Cormier. Then, as Cormier described it, he shucked off his underwear and continued the interview stark naked. His only cover was a towel, which he used to make gestures emphasizing his points instead of wrapping around his waist. And if that meeting wasn't the first time he got naked during an interview, it also wasn't the first time he made a connection between his penis and the military. Once, when Johnson was trying to have a shower installed in the White House, he made it very clear that he wanted powerful jets to shoot water directly at his crotch. When told that it would require too much plumbing work, Johnson replied, "If I can move 10,000 troops in a day, you can certainly fix the bathroom any way I want it."
Okay, so it says right here, Vanity Fair today points out an excerpt from a forthcoming history of the White House called The Residence Inside the Private World of the White House by Kate Anderson Brower. A section of the book about Johnson includes an anecdote about a presidential shower. According to Brower, it was very important that a newly installed jet stream be... I'm not reading that. That's too much. It literally says it was very important that a newly installed jet stream be blasting water directly at Johnson's dick. And it says, when told that it would be inconvenient to have a jet installed into the shower simply so that the water could constantly shoot directly onto him, Johnson reportedly invoked, oh God, I'm not even going to say that stuff.
That's really something.
You can look up the pants belching thing too. That's really something, but
it's funny.
There's a statement from his wife that talked about Johnson just loved people. And it was like, what does that mean? He's like, that's when he got his affair, when he installed that buzzard. Kennedy never had a buzzard in there, but everyone knows about Kennedy's affairs because plenty of women have written fucking books about it. But there was that about Lyndon Johnson about, I mean, I don't know, take that for what it's worth, but I've seen a couple things from pilots that have made statements. And there's a Secret Service, I don't remember if it's Clint Hill or somebody else, that made a statement about Lyndon Johnson was a bolstering figure. You know, when you see Trump handshake somebody and he pulls him in, that was like Johnson.
Yeah, he's famous for like his hugs and his handshakes. And you see these videos of where he's like launching his body into somebody.
Well, that's Johnson did the same thing. Johnson.
Yeah, that's what I meant, Johnson. Yeah.
Johnson knew all the secret, he knew all the politicians and congressmen that he needed to get stuff passed. And he would say something like, remember at that party, or remember something, like, because he hung out with them in his free time as well, too. I mean, he had a taping system, too. Most people think it was just Richard Nixon, but that taping system goes back to Roosevelt. It just changed.
Can I bend your ear about something?
Yeah, I know. I just read a bunch. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. So, you know, I wanted to seize the opportunity to try to talk a little bit about the congressional stock trading. You and I had chatted about that before we started. And, you know, I'm not sure how many people know about this. It does seem like it's gotten a lot of public attention, but I'm not sure it's the kind of thing we think about in our day-to-day life. And that's that, you know, in the federal executive branch, the bulk of what we consider the government, all those federal agencies, there's a criminal law that says if you have stock in a company and you work on something that's affecting that company, You know, you can go to jail for up to 5 years. There's this really strict conflict of interest law. And so right off the bat, anybody goes in the executive branch, for the most part, they have to sell off anything that could potentially relate to their job. And that's a law that Congress passed way back in 1962. But Congress exempted itself from that law in 62 and ever since. And so members of Congress can own anything, and they can buy and trade all they want. Now, technically, they're covered by insider trading laws, but it's incredibly hard to prove insider trading. And it's incredibly hard to get the evidence, especially because, as you kind of pointed out, you shouldn't be running around spying on members of Congress. Then around the time of the pandemic erupting, it became known that a bunch of members of Congress suddenly did these really suspicious trades, like right before the public learned about the pandemic. They were buying and selling. They were selling stocks that were likely to be affected by a pandemic and buying stocks that would benefit from a government response to the pandemic, which they would be funding. And it launched some SEC and FBI investigations, and they weren't able to prove anything because you almost never can. There was one member of Congress around that time who got caught on video insider trading on the White House grounds when he was visiting the White House, and they wound up prosecuting him. But that's the rare exception. For the most part, it's just impossible to prove. Even beside, and the thing is, it turned out all of these members were getting briefings on just how bad the pandemic was going to be before the public knew. So they all knew about a month or two before we did what was about to hit. And then all these trades happened.
Is there evidence on that?
There is. They know the trades happened. And in fact, these people are supposed to disclose the trades, and they did. So they weren't hiding the trades. It's just, and so you know they were at the meetings, you know they did the trades, but you can't prove they did the trades because of what they learned in the meetings. And so they get away with it. Even beyond that, even if it wasn't for the appearance of insider trading, they've got conflicts of interest. Imagine if you've got stock in a company that's going to be developing a vaccine, and then you vote to fund the government's sponsorship of that effort, or you you know, own stock in a particular industry and you vote to raise or lower the taxes on that industry, or some kind of government bailout, or other, you know, there's so many things the government does that affects industry. There's no market that isn't affected by what Congress does. And these people, unlike your average federal worker who go to jail for having a conflict of interest, are completely exempt from it.
Well, they gave Pfizer a, you can't sue Pfizer over their formula thing, and they want it delayed for 75 years, but they're the only one that got an exemption. And the reason why is because that relationship with the government has been there for a very long time. Pfizer's joked about in The Wolf of Wall Street, if you listen closely.
Oh, I'll have to go back and listen to that.
I found it when I was watching The Wolf of Wall Street one day. I had to pause it and rewind it back. I was like, because this is like beginning of COVID. I was like, there's no way. And when the dad was ringing out his son about the money he spent on a dinner, $20,000 on a dinner, and he goes, yeah, it was the Pfizer clients. It was the Pfizer clients. And it was like, obviously he goes, this is a strip club that you hired there. But that the Vigo Ordnance plant is an old bioweapons facility that was closed down, and it was sold to Pfizer. And I'm like, that's like going window shopping or going for a house and you pick the Amityville house. You can pick any other house, but they chose that one. And it was like that name pops up again. And that was in 2001. So that, I think that relationship with Pfizer.
Yeah,
been going
well, and
on a
if
while.
You go look at their financial disclosures, you're going to find tons of members of Congress who own Pfizer stock and are making these decisions. So there was this big effort that started in about 2020. And it was a bipartisan effort. You've got Republicans and Democrats signing on to these bills. The biggest champion of it was Abigail Spanberger, a moderate Democrat out of Virginia, who paired up with Chip Roy, a Republican out of Texas. And they were the leaders of this effort, pushing a bill to ban members of Congress from trading. They weren't even proposing to ban them from owning stocks because they knew they'd have trouble getting their fellow members to go along with it. They thought, well, first step is, we'll at least ban the trading, which will stop insider trading and it'll prevent conflicts of interest from getting worse. And they wound up getting dozens of people from both sides of the aisle. I mean, we live in a country where we can't agree on anything, and members of Congress especially can't agree on anything. And yet you've got AOC and Matt Gaetz signing up for the same bill together, championing this banning of stock trading, that, you know, the two opposite ends of the spectrum. And unfortunately, though, the leaders in Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, turned and fought on them. And this was an issue that pretty much ran not along party lines, but along wealth lines. The richer the member of Congress, the more likely they were to oppose a stock trading ban, except for John Ossoff out of Georgia. He's pretty rich and he was in favor of the ban. But for the most part, it was the really rich members of Congress against the ones who are more like regular people. And Nancy Pelosi refused to let the Spanberger and Roy bill get a vote all year. In the Senate, there were all these bills proposed by Elizabeth Warren and Josh Hawley, you know, lots of people on both sides of the aisle pushing these things. They don't go anywhere because the leaders killed it. And they kept promising action. Pelosi eventually let one bill through that said, well, everybody could create these fake blind trusts where anything could go. Their members of their own family could run their finances and make the trades. I was like, how's that going to solve anything? And so it all died. But in the new Congress, I think Chip Roy and Abigail Spanberger are going to try again. And they do polling. And when they poll the public, like 70% of the public wants members of Congress to stop trading stocks. I mean, how easy a fix would that be? And again, this isn't a country where we don't agree on anything. This may be like one of the only issues where you've got the vast majority of Republicans and Democrats on the same side. And you've got the richest, most entitled members of Congress on both sides blocking it. And even the ones who say they want to do some good succumb to pressure from these powerful members of Congress. You know, McCarthy himself, who's the Speaker of the House now, promised that if he got in control in the rules package, they would ban congressional stock trading. But you saw how hard he had to fight, and there was, you know, a rebellion within his own party. And so he had to make all these compromises, and that wasn't ultimately included. And so pretty much the bad guys in this story are the leaders of both sides of the aisle. And the champions in this story are sort of the rank and file members of Congress who are not rich and are mostly regular people, ranging from the far right to the far left to the moderates in the middle. Doesn't matter. There's just not a partisan divide on this one. It's strictly a wealth divide, and it's disgusting. And so at the Project on Government Oversight, we're going to be pushing really hard for a renewed effort and backing this effort by Spanberger and Roy to try to get this bipartisan legislation through. And I think that's an example of the thing I've been talking about, is this thing where the people at the top of government are exempting themselves from the most basic rules that apply to everyone else. And it undermines trust in government. And I think the more we can get members of the public to push their members of Congress, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, because again, it's not a partisan issue, to ban congressional stock trading, I think there's a rare chance to do some good this year if we can actually get that through.
Who would be in charge of investigating some of those kind of connections that they have?
Yeah, well, there are House and Senate ethics committees, but they're absolutely worthless. And so it really only comes down to the FBI. And the only thing the FBI is going to investigate is if there's, you know, proof of insider trading, which again, you're almost never going to get. It doesn't mean there isn't insider trading. It just means you can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury. And so the FBI is not going to be interested unless there's a really obvious crime being committed. And the problem is some of this isn't even a crime. These conflicts of interest would be a crime in the executive branch, but they're not a crime in Congress because Congress exempted itself. So it's kind of good to be the king, as in that Mel Brooks movie where he kept saying it's good to be the king, because Congress just decided that the law wouldn't apply to them. And now they can do whatever they want. And so it's just, this is the thing that sets my hair on fire these days. And it's the thing that I'm going to be focused on the most this year.
When it comes to that Boggs video I mentioned to you, if you watch, it's 8 minutes long. If you watch it, one thing that gets mentioned, because why haven't we known about this before, the reporter says, And Boggs says, you're asking the FBI to investigate the FBI. Like the Hoover director, that's not going to happen. It's the dumbest thing ever. And I mean, it's like that with congressmen. I mean, you only get held accountable if you're a congress member doing these types of stuff, but that's from another congressman. And are they going to call out your stuff? Because they're probably doing the same thing on the side. I mean, did they just set a precedent for the way that you can act? I think you probably should have more restrictions, but we gave them a lot of power. So I don't know how to fix that.
Yeah, I mean, they're regulating themselves, which is why the House and Senate Ethics Committees are such a joke, because the members of that committee are members of Congress. And so if they come down on one of their peers, they could wind up being the subject of it the next investigation. And so they do nothing. And I think you're absolutely right that when you ask anybody to investigate themselves, you're not going to get the kind of investigation you would if it was done independently.
So we got to look to people like yourself who are doing nonprofit organizations to be able to, I don't know how to give you the power though. I don't have the gavel to be able to do that.
So I mean, we do investigations and it's hard. We work a lot with whistleblowers and information requests. We recently exposed a real problem at the Department of Homeland Security where they did a survey of law enforcement officials and they had tens of thousands responding, and an unbelievable majority of them said they had either witnessed or been exposed to sexual harassment. And as we dug deeper, and not just sexual harassment, sexual assault. And as we dug deeper, Homeland Security's law enforcement agents are getting away with domestic violence, even though there's a law that says if a law enforcement official in the government, federal government, engages in domestic violence, their gun has to be taken away from them. But what happens is the local field managers are going out and pressuring local law enforcement to charge them with something else. Like, can't you bump this down to disorderly conduct or something? My guy will lose his career if you charge him with domestic violence. And so we got a hold of this draft that the inspector general had created and had been sitting on for a long time, like more than a year. I think it was actually a 4-year effort. And he had not let these results see the light of day. And so we got a hold of this and published it and wrote a whole report on how they were covering this up. And immediately after that, Secretary Mayorkas, the head of the department, formed a group to redesign their disciplinary procedures so that there would be more accountability for officials when they engage in this kind of misconduct. And so these nonprofit watchdogs really do manage to achieve some good. It's just a uphill battle and a long, difficult slog. And you have to be comfortable with losing a lot of the time because the government has the power and the information and writes the laws for itself. And so it can be very difficult, but we've been doing this for a long time and have managed to uncover a number of things like that. And so, you know, that's just one recent example. And so we're going to keep plugging away and trying to expose corruption and abuse of power and waste of government resources at the Project on Government Oversight.
Well, more power to you. I can tell you that. That's a lot of work, man. But where can people find your links, Walt?
So the best place to find us is pogo.org, P-O-G-O.org, and you can read about the Project on Government Oversight. I've also got a podcast on the types of issues that we cover, ranging from government abuse to fraud to waste to other kinds of misconduct and corruption. It's called The Continuous Action. Our first season last year was a short one. We had 5-hour-long episodes. We're about to launch 15 half-hour episodes starting in March. So if you look for The Continuous Action, it's on Apple, Stitcher, Amazon Music, pretty much anywhere that you get your podcasts.
And I'm going to link it all in the description. It's been a pleasure chatting, and thanks for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank Podcast.